Bah, humbug. I decided this year to try something a little different. We are going to do several stories about the actual nativity in the next few weeks. And I thought, I want to talk about something that's more traditional, perhaps, or more secular, perhaps. And one of the things that came to me was the idea of talking about a Christmas carol. This story was published 180 years ago, almost to the day. It was published on December the 18th, 1843. And it was sold, the publication was completely sold out by Christmas Eve, less than a week later. It was published at a time when poverty in England was quite severe, and there was a discrepancy between the rich and the people who were the workers. There were a lot of people who were children who were working, and things like holidays and weekends and 9 to 5 and all that stuff was not part of the picture. Yeah, that's the best I can do with that picture. Sorry, you guys. So it was at a time where Christmas had become more of a, like, just go to church and that's it. And Charles Dickens wrote this story. He started it in October and wrote it in a very, very, very short time. And if you look at his writing, much of what he writes about is about the plight of the poor and the division of wealth. And part of it, of course, is his own background, because he, at the age of 12, had to leave school because his father was sent to a debtor's prison. And so he had to provide for his family. And ended up then taking care of his family, including 7 siblings, and working in a factory. The story itself is 5 big chapters. Well, some are shorter than others. They call them staves in those days. And as you might appreciate, it is a story about transformation. And it is a universal story that appeals to so many people in so many ways. We can see ourselves in these characters, that the story has never yet been out of print. So, it also led to a resurgence of the idea of Christmas as a place for food and family and gatherings, that it was sort of on the decline at that point. What's the story? The story is, it's Christmas Eve, and it's a work day, and Scrooge is in his workplace with his employee, Bob Cratchit, and it's cold, and Scrooge is such a miser that he will only allow 1 piece of coal to be in the heater. And so poor Bob Cratchit is freezing and wrapped himself up in a blanket. And Scrooge's nephew comes in and invites his uncle to dinner. And his uncle's like, bah, humbug, out with you. Good afternoon is what he says, which is, in those days, the polite way of saying, go away. And eventually, of course, the nephew, Fred, leaves. And then 2 people come in asking for donations for the poor. And again, Scrooge says, good afternoon, which is his polite way of saying, go away. And then, because they don't understand, he's less than polite when he tells them to go away. And they leave in some confusion. And at the end of the day, of course, he goes his way to his home, which is, he's the sole renter in a house which houses businesses. He's the only person living in this lonely building. And, of course, Bob Cratchit goes back to his family. And as Scrooge comes home, he sees in the door knocker a resemblance of his past business partner, Bob Marley, who had passed away 7 years ago. And Bob Marley comes to life for him and tells him that he's going to be visited by three ghosts, three spirits. And the reason Bob wants him to listen to the spirits is because he doesn't want Scrooge to end up like he himself, Bob himself, because he is chained. The deeds of his life have led him to be chained in the afterlife and burdened forever. And so these three ghosts appear to Scrooge: the ghost of Christmas past, the ghost of Christmas present, and the ghost of Christmas yet to come. That's what it's called, yes. And what happens is, of course, Scrooge is terrified, that he goes for a walk with each one of these ghosts in turn, each one of these spirits in turn. And as a result of seeing these experiences that are shown to him, the ghost of Christmas past shows him his childhood. The ghost of Christmas present shows him his current people, the people in his life, and what they are doing while he's all alone in this cold and dark, lonely home, house. Don't call it a home. And then the spirit of Christmas yet to come shows him how, at the end of his life, the only person who shows any emotion about the fact that he has passed away are his housekeepers and his landlord, I think, because they can hawk some of his stuff and get some money. And he is so devastated by the reality of what happens that he resolves to change. And he asks the ghost of Christmas yet to come if it's too late. And the ghost of Christmas yet to come, who has been unchanging in not listening to Scrooge when he's saying, don't do this, don't do this, don't show me that. The only time you actually see that there's any emotion from this ghost of Christmas yet to come is when Scrooge says, is it too late? And his finger, the ghost's finger, starts to waver. It's a lovely story, and it has many a lesson. In the end, of course, Scrooge does change. And he changes with these words that he says to the ghost of Christmas yet to come. He says, I will honor Christmas in my heart and try to keep it all the year. I will live in the past, the present, and the future. The spirits of all three shall strive within me. I will not shut out the lessons that they teach. And I see someone here who knows the words by heart and is repeating them with me. And I think there is such depth and wisdom to those words. That in order to be in the place where we are fully alive in the present, and where people will mourn us and will see that we had value in the future, we want to be able to live and reconcile with our past, our present, and to know what our future legacy will look like. And isn't it true, if you think about it, that if you've been to any memorial service, they always talk about the love and the gentleness and the generosity of the person that has passed. These are the things that endure. So let's look at some of the ideas that we can learn from so that we too can live in the past, the present, and the future, and have all of them living within us in a place of joy and happiness, or at least in today's theme, peace. The first thing I want to think about is that not everything is a transaction. So consider the idea that experiences and choices do not need to be transactional. And by that, what I mean is that whether you are choosing to be merry or choosing to be in bah humbug mode is a choice. And when Scrooge's nephew comes into his home and he's got red cheeks and a big smile on his face and it's been a brisk day, so he's coming in from this cold, and you kind of get this idea of vibrancy from this young man, he invites Scrooge to come to dinner. And he starts out the interaction with the words, "Merry Christmas," to which Scrooge says, "Merry Christmas, what right do you have to be merry? What reason do you have to be merry? You are poor enough." To which the nephew returns with, "What right have you to be dismal? What reason do you have to be morose? You're rich enough." And again, the wisdom of these words are striking, because we have this myth, do we not, that people who are wealthy are merry and happy, and people who maybe don't have so much in terms of material wealth are not. And what we discover in the story is that true wealth has nothing to do with the bank account. The nephew then goes on to say, "There are lots of things," let me use his language, "there are many things from which I might have derived good, but I have not profited. Christmas among them." And then he says, "Christmas is a good time, a kind time, a charitable, pleasant time. The only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem by one consent to open their shut up hearts freely and to think of people below them as if they are really fellow passengers to the grave and not another race of creatures bound on other journeys." Those are lots of words. But what they're saying is, the nephew has observed that at Christmas time, people see the people. They see humanity. They don't see the levels of their societal norms. but rather it is a time when we remember that we are all on a human journey. And so then he goes on to say, therefore, uncle, though it has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket, I believe that it has done me good and will do me good, and I say, God bless it. We have this contrast, do we not, of Scrooge, who is miserable and wealthy, basically saying, well, why are you being, like, it's costing you to be merry, why are you doing that? And this man saying, it hasn't anything to do with money. It doesn't have to be transactional. Where in our lives do we sometimes hold back because we want tit for tat or quid pro quo, where we make decisions just based on whether or not it's going to give us something back? This idea of do it because it's the right thing to do, rather than because you're going to get something from it, is one idea to share with you. Another idea, that Bah Humbug is no fun to live with. And that's whether you're on the receiving end of Bah Humbug, and oh my gosh, I think we can all identify with that, where we've been in the presence of people who are just miserable. And tell me that's fun. Of course it's no fun to be with. But it's also true that it's not really fun for the person who is the Bah Humbugger, if there is such a word. That sounds really bad. And it's like, rewind, rewind, rewind. The person who is saying Bah Humbug, that person suffers too. And again, we find this wisdom in Scrooge's nephew. It's almost as if he's such, for me, this, at least at this reading, the Scrooge's nephew is such a contrast to him, and it's so interesting because, of course, they are related. But Scrooge's nephew won't put up with anyone saying anything bad about him in a mean way. I mean, they have fun a little bit at his expense, but then they drink a toast to him, to Scrooge. And he says, he's a comical old fellow, that's the truth, and not so pleasant as he might be. However, his offenses carry their own punishment, and I have nothing to say against him. Imagine that generosity of spirit. To recognize that his offenses are his burden, and therefore we don't need to add to it and adopt any of his misery. Again, Scrooge's nephew. I'm sorry for him. I couldn't be angry with him if I tried. Who suffers by his ill whims? Who suffers by his ill whims? Himself, always. Here he takes it into his head to dislike us, and he won't come and dine with us. What's the consequence? And then he goes into, he's going to miss a meal. He don't lose much of a dinner, which doesn't make his girlfriend or his wife feel very good, because, of course, they're trying to put some work into the dinner. But the point there is, it's just a dinner on the surface. But he's losing the whole community and sense of fun with family. We see this miserable old man, lost. And what can we learn from that? That maybe when we are in the presence of Bah Humbug, that we can be as generous as Scrooge's nephew and recognize the pain that that person must be experiencing, because it is not our nature to be miserable. And this leads to the next point, and that is that no person is two-dimensional. If you take a look at the Ghost of Christmas Past and he takes Scrooge back to his childhood, to a place where we find that Scrooge was not wanted at his home. So he was sent to boarding school. And then at Christmas time, all the other children get picked up and taken away back to their homes for Christmas. And this young lad, Scrooge, is left all by himself at Christmas time. And his sister, who loves him dearly, comes to find him and let him know that she has advocated for him with their dad, and he has given permission for him to come home for Christmas, and this is all great excitement. And of course, this is the sister who has since died. And so there is loss and hurt in Scrooge's past that has colored his experience of life. And when we look at this grumpy old man, and all we see is the grumpy old man, it's like looking at the tip of an iceberg and not recognizing the hurt and the life experiences that are beneath it that created it. Nobody is just black and white. We are all products of our past. And it may help us to find compassion then for the people who are being curmudgeonly, who are being Bah Humbug. As you guys know, I have a new granddaughter. She's going to be 6 months next week. Yes, thank you. And of course, she is the most beautiful, happy child on the planet, as I'm sure every grandmother says about every grandchild. But what I know to be true about her, and what I'm sure is true about every grandmother who speaks about their grandchild, is that she is a happy child. Her nature is life, is joy, is connection. She's now at the place where when you tickle, she laughs. Like everything is fun and life-giving. And that would be true for Scrooge. That when he was born, when any child is born, their nature is to respond to what is going on around them. Their nature is life. And so, when we see people who are hurt, what if we could see it as a response to the hurt? You may have heard the idea of hurt people. So could we be more compassionate to the person who is being Bah Humbug? And can we be more compassionate to the person who is being Bah Humbug even when it's ourselves. Because there will be times when we are the curmudgeon. And can we also be kind to ourselves and go, oh, this is just a response to something. And then we have another idea. And that is, if we are dealing with the curmudgeon, whether it's ourselves or with someone else, with the Bah Humbug, the miserable experienced person, are we willing to be like Fred and keep the door open? Because I know if it were me and I had said to someone, come and join us for dinner, and they're like, you're wasting your time, why are you doing all this? I might very well just say, well, good afternoon. And turn my back and close the door. But what we see in his behavior is, I have no quarrel with you. I'm going to have a Merry Christmas. The invitation remains open. Generosity of spirit is not closing the door. And then, because of that, when the person is ready to change, they are more likely to approach. Because what if his nephew had been like my reaction would have been, which is like, see you later, doors shut, don't let it hit you on the, you know, on the way out, or whatever the saying is right now. But what is the likelihood then that Scrooge, having decided to change the way that he approaches life, would he not be less likely to have the courage to go to that door and knock and say, hey, can I join you for Christmas dinner? It does take courage to admit that you've been on the wrong path. It does take courage to ask and make amends. But it's easier if you don't have somebody saying, I told you so. So if you can, try and be generous. Try and keep your Christmas merry, even if theirs is miserable. And leave the door open a little, just in case. Scrooge ends up changing. He throws open the windows. He sees for the first time with gentle eyes the people who are walking the streets. And he spends money to send a turkey to Tiny Tim's house, to Bob Cratchit's house, which includes the son, Tiny Tim. And that's the final point. Is that it's never too late to change. And the change does make a difference. And we see in the story a renewed joy of life as he goes and enjoys Christmas with his nephew and his niece by marriage and all of their friends. We see that Tiny Tim, who is destined to pass away, now is supported enough by the wealth of Scrooge that he is able to live. In fact, we see that Scrooge becomes like a second father to him. And we get this idea of a new family, a new meaning in life. And here's the courage that happens when you make amends in the book. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh. For he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the melody in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was enough for him. This Christmas, as you think about your own past, your present, and your future, I encourage you to think of this story, to realize that where you came from will affect who you are today, and allow yourself some compassion and understanding for that. Allow yourself to recognize that what you do today will make a difference in the future. And do what makes your heart laugh. Honor Christmas in your heart. Try to keep it all the year. Live in the past, the present, and the future. And Scrooge knew how to keep Christmas well. May that truly be said of us and all of us. And as Tiny Tim observed, God bless us, everyone.